is in here. She and her husband were on several months ago on Veterans Day. Military families, military background, and serving our country courageously and making those types of sacrifices. And a homeschool mom. And how many kids do you guys have now?
We have four.
Four. And yeah. You're how old?
I'm 33.
And how old are your kids?
We have a three.
See, we're doing the math.
3, 8, 11, and 13.
Yeah, so a busy military homeschooling mom, millennial conservative Christian. That's a pretty long business card. So you described yourself off the air because I was noticing some of the stuff because we run in a little bit of the same circles because of our church. But just noticing how you think, how you process the issues, how you write, how you communicate. But from my perspective, you're an abnormal person to be able to think the way you do and be a critical thinker, to work through things rationally and then to communicate that. But then given your age and everything, I mean, it's just kind of, you described it as kind of you're nerding out most of the time.
Yes.
So and
I'm very proud of that.
You're very proud of that. But how did you end up this way? That you care about these issues, you care about founding principles, you're a follower of Jesus Christ, and you don't just, it's not an internal thing. I mean, you put out some pretty profound things on Facebook. How'd you end up this way?
Well, I remember when I was 5 years old, I was sitting at my grandparents' kitchen table and I was watching George H.W. Bush be inaugurated. And I just remember sitting there eating my cereal, and that just really stuck out to me, and it struck me, and it's stuck with me over the years. Shortly after that, my father got stationed in Germany, so we moved over there. And I remember seeing on the news the Berlin Wall coming down.
Wow.
And once again, these things just really stood out to me and just seemed profound, even though I couldn't articulate why. Fast forward several years, when I'm 16 years old, I ended up going on to a missions trip, and it was just up and down the East Coast, but it was with a pro-life group. I really didn't know much about the pro-life cause and argument. I was going there I was going with some friends. We were going to go on this missions trip. We were Christians. We wanted to just help out wherever we could. So we went to some juvenile detention centers. We went out to peacefully protest in front of abortion clinics and pray. And God completely opened up my eyes during that time. And parts of my heart that I just felt like had never been affected before were affected in profound ways. And just I was awakened to the reality of the injustice that goes on primarily in the abortion movement.
Yeah.
And so that was something that just kind of set a fire under me. And ever since then, though, I've really just had a desire and a strong connection with what our nation's founding principles were. And I feel like they've been abused and misused and misconstrued so much over the years that a desire to get the correct and accurate information out has just been something that's fueled me, and that's fueled me through my whole time in school and so on.
Because you studied government, you studied politics.
Yes.
And now you're back in it again, right, pursuing another degree, Regent University and the Koch brothers, right? You're involved with that,
right,
too.
Right. So I was part of last spring, I was part of the Koch Leaders Program. So I got to attend Acton University over the summertime and just listen to some profound thinkers. Peter Kraft. That was amazing.
Did you hear Father Sirico?
Yes, I did.
He's been on the show before.
Oh.
Yeah,
that's
he's awesome.
Yes. He's a great man. So just being able to be exposed to all of these type of thinkers, as well as just reading documents. I brought with me my well-loved copy of the Federalist Papers.
Yes.
I love it. I love reading these documents because I feel like there has been so, like I said, so much misinformation put out there that my heart is for young people to understand really where we came from.
Yeah.
And I think that will help better understand where we're going.
And we've lost that. And I mean, right now you're speaking to, I mean, in your own peer group, millennials that are, what percentage of your peer group do you think have any constitutional literacy at all?
Very, very little.
Like 5%,
10%? Probably.
You know, and I teach high school age homeschoolers, a 2-semester course on Constitution and civics. And every time I show them something else, I'm like, well, congratulations. Now you're smarter than 95% of your fellow American citizens. And it's sad, but it's true. And so do you feel this sense of obligation to your own age group and to people beneath you to kind of bring them back and introduce them to the true history of this country and to the founding principles? And for us as Christians, all that stuff starts to meld together.
Yes, yes. I think that it's crucial that the next generation and my generation and really gets a better understanding. We were spoon-fed something else. We weren't spoon-fed the actual real milk of the founding documents. We were given interpretations of it, and those interpretations have slants. But if we can read the original text, and we don't have to be experts in all of these things, but just even a little bit at a time, just understanding and getting better context of what was going on when they were written, I think that will really help inform us, because right now it just seems like America, a lot of the millennial argument is that America was founded on injustice. We had injustices and we can't deny that. But we also need to look at some other stories that were going on during that
same
time.
Well, we look at the injustice perpetrated on the American Indians, and then we look at chattel slavery, and then we look at the civil rights movement, and who could doubt that those things are terrible blights on the history of the country? But that's not the only thing about the country. You have to tell the complete story. If we were talking in a church context, we'd call it the full counsel of God. But that's not what people your generation and under have heard. They've heard an interpretation of the events. Do you find that as you share truth and you go back to founding documents and you begin to just show people, hey, look, let me show you a different take on these things. Are millennials, people your age, receptive to that? Are they getting it?
I think if you're willing to have a civil discourse with them and respect them as a person, they will listen, and I believe they'll think about it more. The problems arise, I believe, especially in conservatives, and I know sometimes we don't want to hear this, but when we talk in a condescending manner where we're looking down, we're calling people libtards and things like that, and we're not even treating them like a person. We've got the keyboard courage that they have, but when we're coming face to face, we would take a different approach. So we need to be thoughtful and careful about how we frame these things, not because we're trying to be deceptive, but because as a Christian, that informs how I treat other people, and they've got dignity in the eyes of God. So I want to help them see something that I've spent so much time learning, just like I have a lot to learn from other people in other arenas.
Well, I think the thing that we have to remember, I mean, for us, for both of us as followers of Christ, it's back to the matrix, the blue pill and the red pill. So you don't understand truth. My wife described it. We were saved within, you know, weeks or if not a couple of months of one another. And all of a sudden, just driving to work one day, everything looked different to her. Because all of a sudden the scales have fallen off, and now you can see truth. Well, most of the people that we're arguing with on Facebook or wherever, a lot of those folks don't even have possession of the truth. And so you're getting mad at a lemon tree for dropping lemons, which doesn't accomplish anything and harms your witness. But I think the other thing we have to realize is it's going to take time. We can't have like a one-size-fits-all solution to this problem. It's one conversation, one relationship, and it takes time, right?
Yes, it does. And I believe that the conservative movement, we need to have a long-term plan here. The progressives did. They knew what they were doing.
Oh, my goodness. You can go back in the 70s if you want to look at the homosexual movement, for example.
Yep.
And they had a game plan, and they stuck to it.
Yep. There's much to be learned from that.
Yeah. So we'll kind of unpack that as we come back. What kind of a conservative message is going to be effective in this world, not just for older folks like, you know, myself, but younger people like Brooke and like her generation, and especially our kids that are coming up behind us. Can we have effective conservative messaging to begin to turn the tide here in the United States of America? We'll talk about that. Donald Trump, the law, a bunch of other things when we come back right up. Call to Action Radio. Great to be with you today here with my friend Brooke Nicole, a sister in Christ and a constitutionalist, a federalist, somebody that understands the Constitution, has been studying it, speaking out about it, and continuing to study it. It's great to have her here in the studio today, which for me, I'm always thinking in terms of this isn't my show, which is why I've always struggled with the name. Radio would say, hey, Steve, it should really be the Steve Noble Show. And I'm like, listen, I got enough problems with my ego as it is. I don't need the show named Steve Noble Show. And it's not my show. So I'm just trying to think of myself as a steward of the time. And so with something, when I'm looking at show content or show partners to bring them on and bring some content to it, I look for the holes. And one of the holes is we don't have enough conservative, strong, godly women, especially in Christian media. We just don't have enough of that. I know of two Christian talk show hosts that are out there in Christian media, and that's not enough. So I look at that and go, okay, there's a hole there. And then that's I started noticing the way that Brooke would carry herself on Facebook and the way she thought and the way she communicated. And I said, okay, that can add to the show. That can add to the content. So Brooke is here in the studio today for her second time. She was here with her husband back in November for Veterans Day. And thank you, as always, for your service as a military wife, and make sure you tell your husband we said thank you once again. So let's just dive into the Donald Trump thing here, and we'll continue to talk about conservative messaging and being effective. But what do you think so far? It's been 2.5 weeks. The Trumpster before, it was a Saturday Night Live skit 5 years ago. Now he's the president. And what do you think? I mean, what did you think of Trump in the primaries, in the general, and now as president?
Well, at the beginning of the primaries, I remember watching the first presidential debate. Anybody who knows me knows I love debates. Even last night, I was watching one. And
that was Feel the Burn and Ted Cruz talking about
Raphael, my homeboy. So I was, I was not a fan of Trump at the beginning. And I remember just thinking, what a joke. Why is he even on this stage? And then as time progressed and it got closer and closer to the convention and primary season was getting ready to get over, I became a little worried and concerned. And then I realized which
direction.
Why
were you worried?
Because he was, you just didn't know what was going to happen next with him. There was no predictability whatsoever, except that people were going to be offended.
How did you deal with his history being a woman and the things he said, the things he's done? He's got, what, 5 kids by 3 wives?
Right.
There's not a lot there to hang your hat on from a moral perspective, as far as we know. But how did that affect you as a woman, as a wife, and as a mother?
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody knows about the hot mic comments that he made, and that was incredibly offensive and worrisome. It definitely caused a lot of pause. I remember World Magazine issuing, you know, a request for him to bow out of the race.
Yeah.
And I couldn't argue with a lot of that. But when I thought about the alternative,
right,
after the primaries, I was a Cruz fan before, during the primaries, but after the primaries, I remember, look, there's two alternatives that we have here that are viable. And one of them is going to become president. And when you look at the long term, which we spoke the last segment about, just the conservative movement needs to have long term goals. When you look at long term goals, which candidate will get us closer to those goals?
Right.
And that's what we have to be pragmatic. And that's not using our conscience. It just means my conscience begs me to be pragmatic about certain situations because God has given me the ability to reason and right, I need to do it.
Yeah. And I always said throughout the primaries and then into the general election, it's not a sin to be pragmatic.
Right.
And every choice you have in this world at this time is a broken choice. You're always choosing between the lesser of two evils because that's what exists in this world. I mean, it's wisdom guided by scripture as we walk through whatever arena we're in. But I was the same way. It's not a sin to be pragmatic. So he wins, and then were you surprised that he won?
Yes.
I was too. I mean, I was 60-40. 60% Hillary's going to win, 40% Donald's going to win.
Mm-hmm. I felt the same way. I remember just kind of going into the election evening, and I was just excited about watching the news coverage. I really get geeked out about
it. Yeah, you're
going to
geek out about it no matter
what.
Yeah,
I ordered pizza. I had some friends over, my kids and I. I'm just like trying to get them all psyched up. I printed out an electoral map for them to like color in as the evening went by. And no
you're
one in my
awesome.
House is as excited about this stuff as I am, but I just kind of carry them on. And so, but I did not have any illusions that this was going to work out in my favor. And then come around 3 a.m. in the morning, they're starting to call it for Trump. That was incredible.
Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable.
Why do you think he won?
I believe he tapped into a part of America and Americans, especially up in that Rust Belt, that Hillary Clinton just wasn't able to. She just assumed and took for granted that they were going to go her way. And they were fed up. They were fed up with the economy. They were fed up with just kind of having Democratic candidates believe that they were just going to naturally go their direction.
Right.
And she took it for granted, and Trump didn't.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch all that. So she takes for granted the middle America, and now the Democrat Party, at least some of the things I've read recently, coming out with the fact that they don't understand middle America.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand middle America at all. They also realize that they don't understand religious America. They don't understand you. They don't understand me. So they have no ability to message into that. And whereas she thought it was just going to be a crowning accomplishment because her last name's Clinton, he came in. And then, of course, he collected the anger vote, which is why I think we see the type of backlash we see today. Have you been surprised at the veracity and the quickness of all the protests?
Well, I guess come December, when December came around and you could see that they were trying to stir up some stuff during the Electoral College vote, I think that was December 19th, you could tell that they were going to be prepared with resistance for the next 4 years.
Oh,
and we just need to accept that's the case, and we need to be prepared to fight for what we believe is right and what we know is right. So I was not surprised. Now, when the Women's March came around and things like that shortly after the inauguration, it was disturbing seeing some of the things that came out of there, because I could see now, okay, this is the angle they're going to take and this is the narrative they're going to push. And it's been disconcerting to see that so many people are just desiring to be part of this resistance, but they're not really sure exactly why they're resisting, yeah, except the superficial idea of injustice and inequality. But like I said, I think you and I were speaking about this earlier, the meanings of those words have changed over the years. So equality under the law is equal treatment under the law. Right. That doesn't mean egalitarianism, where everybody has the same amount of money,
yeah,
as everyone
equal
else.
Outcome. Correct. It's equal access. It's the pursuit of happiness,
right,
not the guarantee of it.
Right. And so that was something like the Women's March, for example, going back to that. That was concerning, because with the death of words, C.S. Lewis wrote on this. He wrote an essay called On the Death of Words. And he talked about how the word gentleman has been changed over the years and transformed, and no longer does it mean what it used to mean in his day and age. I think he wrote it like in 1948 or something, or 1940. Then when we look at the death of words, just even when it comes to women's rights and what the word choice now means and what it should mean, and then the women's movement, at the Women's March, when they came out and they were saying they're marching on behalf of all women, well, there are so many marginalized women in parts of the world, such as the Muslim countries and just other parts of the world. Yet when we say that we don't have equal access to things, we're actually degrading what they're going through, which is the genuine suffering, right, the right, genuine marginalizing of women. And we need to be conscious of those things so that we don't just continue to kill off all these words where they eventually mean nothing. Yeah. Injustice eventually means nothing if everything is unjust.
Right, exactly. So now Trump, in the first 2.5 weeks, moving fast, he's a chief executive kind of guy. He's used to running a business that it's his name, and he just gets stuff done. You see a problem, you fix it, you move on. What do you think so far? What kind of grade would you give him?
Okay, his first week in office, I gave an A-. I was happy with the Mexico City policy and, you know, just his decision to pull federal funding of abortions. I thought that was great, and he was keeping a campaign promise. Then all of a sudden, the immigration ban, yep, rolled out, highly controversial, and it sent everybody...
Don't you mean Muslim ban?
Oh, yes, I forgot. That's what the new immigration word means now.
Right,
so,
right. Got to get that right.
Yeah. Got to keep feeding that narrative. So... That was something that kind of, I just remember hearing that and just deciding, okay, I need to do my homework and real fast and try to understand what's going on here. So I am not a fan of executive orders unless they're absolutely necessary. President Obama issued a number of them, hundreds of them. Mm-hmm. And so I understand that sometimes we need executive orders to overthrow the faulty ones. However, I hope moving forward there is more cooperation with Congress. But I do understand that executive orders do have their place. So he came out swinging. He's ready to do business and to hold up his campaign promises. Really happy with the nomination of Neil Gorsuch for Supreme Court.
Yep,
looking
excellent.
Forward to that.
Yeah, that's an A-plus choice right there. We'll see what happens. I'm sure that I think Mitch McConnell will use the nuclear option. I think he's going to change, yeah, the rule once again. And they'll only need 51 votes to confirm him as the next U.S. Supreme Court justice, which is awesome. What do you think about Trump and his tweeting?
Well, I have a Twitter just for the exclusive reason of following,
following
him and a few others.
On Twitter. Yeah. So what do you think about that?
I think that he is tapping into a way to connect to the American people in a way that I believe Franklin Roosevelt did back in the day with radio. And so he's seeing an opportunity to do that. However, the concern I have, I think it's got some benefits, but the concern is that he is directly appealing to the American people, but the American people don't directly elect the president. They need to be connected with their Congress, their leaders in Congress, and I think that's essential, and I don't want him to usurp and override,
yeah,
that.
And I think we're going to see that problem when we complain about the abuse of executive power when it's a Democrat in the office. We need to be just as concerned about the abuse of executive power when it's our guy, quote unquote, our guy in there.
Yes.
Abuse of power is abuse of power regardless of who is abusing it, so we need to make sure we're doing that. Freedom, the eternal price of freedom is eternal vigilance, right? So we need to stay vigilant.
So what are we waiting for? A message in the sky.
Welcome back to Steve Noble Call to Action Radio here with Brooke Nicole, a conservative military wife and mother and millennial. Now try to, you mix all that stuff together and what do you get? A nerd, right? Is that, you said it yourself.
Some people call it a nerd, Steve.
Other
some
people call it
very fun person.
Well, there you go. See, and so great to have Brooke back, and she was on with her husband back in November on Veterans Day, talking about life as a military family and came out of military families and met in the military context, and just a great story. And really appreciate you guys coming and sharing back on Veterans Day, and hopefully we'll make that an annual event. That's to take us into that world. Most of us don't know anything about it, but today just talking about all kinds of subject matter and Trump and the elections and conservative messaging. And like this is a, let's go back to the Women's March for a second. I shared this one with you earlier. And this is out of Germany. But I think you tell me if you think this is probably somewhat accurate of these large protesting crowds that we see here in America, all the anti-Trump crowds, whether it's the Women's March, Berkeley or wherever. 92% of left-wing activists live with their parents and 1 in 3 are unemployed. That was in Berlin. Okay,
right.
So they're looking at all these activists out there that are showing up at these things. And they're saying, you know what? These are a bunch of kids who most of them can't leave the house. They're still living with mom and dad. A third of them are unemployed. 92% still live with their parents. And so they don't have anything better to do, literally. And then we have to remember that people like George Soros are paying them.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So we're buying into a narrative that there's this massive group of Americans who are so upset with the direction of the country and that Donald Trump's the president. But I think we're looking at an illusion.
Right. Well, I think it's primarily George Soros groupies. These are people that basically they have found something that they are upset about, which is, okay, that the economy and their opportunity for jobs, which now all of a sudden they can't get a degree in, or I mean, they've got a degree in something like queer theory and they can't put it into
right.
practice somewhere. You
well,
know,
they can when they're making coffee at Starbucks.
That's about it.
Right.
And so I can understand the frustration there. But then, of course, in a lot of these colleges, they get told that it is capitalism that's the enemy and conservatives are the ones that promote capitalism. Therefore, they are our enemies, and we need to do all we can to dismantle this. I mean, we saw it even with Karl Marx back in the 80s. Well, we didn't see it, but you know what I mean. So we heard about that. That was, there's always got to be an enemy that we have so that will fuel our passion to be able to overthrow what we see as an unjust society and an unjust hierarchy. And so that's what we're seeing right here. And these people have nothing else to do with their time, unfortunately, because they don't have meaningful, gainful employment. And so we need to look at that and say, okay, what can we do to help people like this see what's really going on, the underlying causes of these issues? Because right now they're being spoon-fed something that's telling them, okay, this is a conservative problem that, and they've perpetrated this against you. This is the problem of capitalism, when in reality, most of the capitalism that has issues like that is crony capitalism. And so we just need to get out there, and instead of just hiding in our own conservative circles, we need to really engage and consider how can we dialogue with these people. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I understand how difficult it is to get out there and dialogue in these ways. So thank God for social media.
Yeah.
We have the opportunity to reach the world at our fingertips, but we need to be able to show them something different and offer up something different that promotes them and lends to human dignity, but also challenges people. We shouldn't just, you know, give them a gold star sticker for showing up.
Right.
But on the other hand, we also need to acknowledge that they're coming from a completely different mental and academic framework than maybe we are if we've been taught to think more in line with original documents. And
well,
things
I think
that.
Oftentimes in social media has certainly made this worse. We just essentially kind of dig in on either side of the aisle and then we throw bumper stickers at each other.
Yeah.
And nothing changes. We just, the divided states of America becomes deeper, more deeply divided every day. So your primary outsource now for talking about this and getting these political thoughts and understanding first principles of this nation is Facebook, social media.
Mm-hmm.
So give us some pointers based on your own experience in terms of what works, how do you approach it, how do you get into these conversations and maintain your witness, because we're both followers of Jesus Christ, but to be effective in communicating with people and persuading people
right.
who really don't know the facts around most of these issues.
I think motive is first and foremost key. Desiring not just to be right, but to make sure that you're giving out accurate information, which then requires that we do a little bit of research. It doesn't mean that we have to have, you know, a degree in everything we speak on. I'm not talking about that. What I'm just saying is that let's just dig a little bit deeper before we post an article. We see this big push against fake news now. However, the problem arises when somebody that we don't agree with determines what is fake and what isn't fake, because then all of a sudden conservative voices might end up being silent. So we need to be careful about that. So I would say research information, make sure that you're giving out accurate information.
Before you hit post. Make sure that you're actually being accurate in what you're
correct.
Sharing.
Correct. And we've all made mistakes in that arena. Thank God there's edit buttons and deletes. But we want to always strive for that. And also, just like I said, to recognize that the person that's reading that is another human being just like you. Some of them might be family members, some might be friends, or some might be strangers. But we need to just go into it with the mind to actually have a civil dialogue.
Now, do you generally ask questions? I mean, tell us about how you would normally do a post on Facebook. If you want to get into one of these topics, which you do often.
Right.
How do you do that? Do you end it with a question? What's the approach there? Because I know people engage you. I mean, I mm-hmm. watch it happen.
Right. Typically, if I'm unsure about a situation or it's a really new concept, such as the immigration ban, we weren't really sure what was going on with that because it just was released on a Friday night or a Friday evening. And I just promote dialogue by posting an article or maybe an op-ed that's discussing that and asking some questions and also forming or, you know, putting out my opinion of what I believe and what I'm seeing right now. But I always do it in a way that people understand they're welcome to disagree with me, and I'm not going to shut them down. I might disagree back, but that doesn't mean that we're not about unfriending people just because they have a disagreeing voice. And so I think that's key. But also, yeah, being humble and not just slighting people and calling them ridiculous names because we don't agree with them.
Yeah, and I think you got to take the information that's out there. And I'm just going to read. This is a post that you did last night while you were watching the Ted Cruz-Bernie Sanders debate. I'm reading directly from your page. Sanders, rich people get good health care. Working class people don't. See what he did there? Now, this is what Brooke wrote on her Facebook page. He always tries to draw a distinction between rich and working as if rich people don't work. This is the problem with socialism. It always bases its arguments on the belief that rich equals bad, lazy, and greedy. I know a few rich folks, and I'm pretty sure I've seen next to nothing that fits that bill exhibited in their lives. So that's where you see this stuff going on out there all the time. And you go, okay, hold on a second. Let's unpack that for a second. Let's see what he's saying. Because what Bernie Sanders just said is that rich people are not the same as working people, that working class people work and rich people don't. So how did they get rich without working? Well, they must have stolen it or abused people or just inherited it. So they're rotten people, right?
Correct.
And people just buy that narrative.
Yeah. And that's why we have people protesting. That's why we had that big movement. I used to live in Washington State, and that was during the time when they would have that 99%, those rallies and everything, and just rail against what they considered the bourgeois. And that's because they haven't been told anything differently. If we're following people like Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, and they're there to just continue to fuel this resentment and pit these people against one another, then we're not going to realize it. And also, if we don't actually know people that fit that bill. So if we don't know wealthy people, or if we don't know wealthy Christian people, then maybe we have a bad taste in our mouth because we've just believed what we've been taught or only what we've seen from other interactions. So it's just key to be able to really understand what, like, for example, Bernie Sanders last night was aiming at, which was interesting because he was talking about universal health care and how that should be a universal right.
Right. Everybody has a right to health care.
Right, which was very interesting. Ted Cruz was able to kind of go down that road, but not too much. It just would have taken too much time. But really, he was just saying, look, we've got the Bill of Rights, and the rights are for government not to infringe upon our decisions, our money, our choices that we have to make. And so when we look at healthcare as a universal right and want universal Medicaid like Bernie Sanders wants, then they're effectively just taking away the right because we're going to now have to ration. Every single country that has done socialized healthcare has had to go down that path. And so it just boils down to what we as Americans want. We value our independence. But if we value our independence, we actually need to do something about defending it.
And you also got to talk about, every American deserves to have a right or has a right to proper health care. Show me one that doesn't. Show me somebody in the current system for the past 50 years that can't go to any hospital and get emergency treatment. no hospital turns people away for emergency treatment.
Right.
So you go, okay, so let's deal with that and say, all right, let's get that boogeyman off the table.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to any hospital, even if you're indigent, and you're going to get care. So everybody has access to health care. It's ongoing health care. And then nobody understands the free market. So you just, I'll usually get people, I'll switch the context. So somebody wants to talk about socialized medicine. I'll go, hold on a second. Let's drop healthcare for a second. Let me talk to you about car insurance. Like, what kind of car insurance do you have? Do you ever go to car insurance websites? Do you realize why you get such a low rate on car insurance? You want to know why? Because they shop from providers. I'm doing the commercial for one of these guys. They shop from providers from all over the country and find you the lowest available price. The problem with healthcare is we don't have a competitive system.
Right.
You're stuck in North Carolina with only North Carolina providers, and you got like 6 or 7 or 8 of them. And so that's price fixing there, and you're not using the market. People don't understand the most basic truths, even a free market of capitalism. Like you said earlier, Brooke, they've been taught a different narrative. We have the same, this is like dealing with Glenn Beck? He's a Mormon. So they have the same vocabulary, freedom, equality, rights, but a different dictionary. So we use the same word.
Correct.
But we have a completely different understanding of what that word means, which is why we have to have these conversations like Brooke is having. Brooke, it's been great having you on, and let's make sure we do it again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, friends, there you go. And engage in those conversations. Keep your witness. Make sure you know the facts before you dive into it on Facebook. We can't be part of the fake news cycle ourselves, especially if you're a Christian. This is Steve Noble. It's called Action Radio, and God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.